sovereignty's where it's at. Ron Paul, Ron Paul, big bad Ron. The debates he told why the terrorists attack, and Rudy Giuliani was taken aback. Said, never heard that, that's absurd. There's one man there who had the last word, Ron Paul. He called a blowback like the CIA and the 9/11 Commission. Did you read what they say? Giuliani thought that he was cool, but old Ron Paul, he took him to school. Spent 40 years working for you and me. Constitutional principles, and he's got them. Go to RonPaul2008.com. Ron Paul, Ron Paul, big bad Ron.
And let freedom ring. You're listening to The Freedom Message with Steve and Vincent live on BBSRadio.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. Due to some technical difficulties, we're going to have an alternate call-in number today. If you want to call into the show, please use this number, 530-876-9026, 530-876-9026. Once more time, 530-876-9026. That's also available on the webpage and at bbsradio.com. So today we'll have a special guest for you. The guest will be Mr. Bruce Fine, and he is a former Reagan administration assistant attorney general and someone who is very well known in the conservative community. He is also the head of a group called American Freedom Agenda, who helped Ron Paul draft the American Freedom Agenda Act of 2007, H.R. 3835, recently introduced to the House of Representatives. So we will have Mr. Fine on for us, and this will be an excellent opportunity to ask some questions of someone who can help us gain an understanding of the legislative process and the reasons why we needed to have this act, the American Freedom Agenda Act. It's something that I did read for you, I believe it was on Monday. And we'll be going over it again. It's, again, to restore the Constitution's checks and balances and protections against government abuses as envisioned by the Founding Fathers. And the primary thrust of the bill appears to be to take back the powers that the executive has granted itself, or that it has been given by Congress. The executive is in the process of transforming itself into a near dictatorial branch of government with the justification of terrorism and 9/11. It has established the Military Commissions Act, which basically denies us the rights of habeas corpus, of due process of law, which it allows the president to designate you or anyone else that it deems appropriate as an enemy combatant, thereby stripping that person of their rights of habeas corpus, of due process of law, allowing the president to hold you incommunicado and to deny you the right to an attorney, to deny you the right to a jury of your peers, and to try you in a military commission. And that is repealed by this act, the American Freedom Agenda Act. It also establishes that torture shall not be admissible as evidence in any civilian or military tribunal of the United States. It also establishes that intelligence gathering by the executive is subordinate to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, also known as FISA, and therefore reining in the executive's ability to wiretap, surveil, and otherwise monitor American citizens without due process of law. It also reins in presidential signing statements, whereby the president simply declares what he interprets the law to be and declares what he will do with regards to any law that crosses his desk, thereby essentially legislating after the fact by simply making a declaration. It also addresses kidnapping, detentions, and torture abroad, making it illegal for any officer or agent of the United States to kidnap, imprison, torture any person abroad based solely on the president's belief that the subject is an enemy combatant. And also the use of secret evidence to make foreign terrorist designations is also outlawed. The president may not designate someone a foreign terrorist with the use of secret information, secret evidence. If they have evidence, they are required to present it in a court of law. I've been listening to Mr. Fein speak on these issues in a variety of news shows in which he's appeared. He's very much someone who has appeared on pretty much all of the major news media, speaking on issues of constitutionality, speaking on the issue of impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney, generally speaking, presenting the conservative constitutionalist agenda. And it's very refreshing to know that there is someone with Mr. Fein's background and connections and who supports the constitutionalist position of Dr. Ron Paul. And it's also encouraging to know that there are others in addition to Mr. Fein. As part of American Freedom Agenda, we also have Mr. Richard Viguerie, who is a well-known conservative activist, who is also part of that same organization, which gave birth to this American Freedom Agenda Act. And there are also those on what we would normally perceive as the left who have jumped on board with this as well. Naomi Wolf and groups that she is associated with that we might normally associate with liberal Democrats are also supporting this move towards the restoration of the Constitution's checks and balances and protections against government abuses as envisioned by the Founding Fathers. So the theme of constitutionalism, of the rule of law, is certainly gaining traction right now. And I think that we have Ron Paul and the Ron Paul Revolution to thank for that. We effectively, friends, have put the constitutionality of the actions of our government officials on the agenda. We have placed it back in the national conversation, where it has been significantly sidelined for many, many years. And I think that the intention of certainly the executive is that it would have been permanently sidelined. But fortunately, the spark of liberty has not yet been fully extinguished. We have great men such as Ron Paul, such as G. Edward Griffin, who appeared on the show on Monday, who have held that lamplight of liberty aloft, who have maintained their integrity through dark times. And now we see that light of liberty touching the hearts and minds of many around the country. And it's leaping from one heart to another. And thus, the Ron Paul Revolution has emerged into a national, undeniable phenomenon and political force. So with the action of you, the American citizen, stepping forward to support liberty, support freedom, support constitutionality of government, and the action of those who are well positioned in the government and in different aspects of the establishment, such as Dr. Ron Paul and Mr. Bruce Fein, we are well situated and well positioned to take our country back and restore constitutional government. So I believe that we do have Mr. Bruce Fein on the line right now. Are you there with us, Mr. Fein?
Yes, I am. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm very pleased to have you on. And I really became aware of you and your work through the American Freedom Agenda Act. And I was, of course, quite thrilled to see the introduction of that bill and made it an immediate subject of inquiry and investigation. And I, of course, in the process of doing that, discovered the American Freedom Agenda, your organization, and became familiar with that. So what we might do for folks today, and you might know that, like to know that many of the listeners that we have are people that are either active in support of Ron Paul and his message of freedom and his drive towards constitutional government, or they at least sympathize with it and would all like to know more and be empowered with information that will help them reach more people with this message. So perhaps we could start with a little background. I understand that you were in the Reagan administration as an assistant attorney general.
Yes, I go back actually to the Nixon days. I was in the Office of Legal Counsel researching what was an impeachable offense at the time of the Watergate investigation. So my history in Washington is some 40 years, more than 40 years, in all branches of government. I clerked in the judiciary. I served on the Iran-Contra Committee in Congress, and this was in the executive branch, including the Department of Justice, as Associate Deputy Attorney General for about 15 years. And what is clear from my perspective is that the checks and balances envisioned by the Founding Fathers has not become obsolete, that those in power crave more power. Their motives are generally suspect. They do not come to Congress or to politics for altruistic reasons. That's what the Founding Fathers expected, and that's why one branch of government was assigned in part a task of policing or vetting another branch. And this administration, of course, is not the sole culprit. The problems that begun to emerge in earlier administrations, too, is, I think, the high watermark of crippling checks and balances and approaching government by executive branch edict. And let me give you and your listeners, say, 10 examples of where I think the greatest and most acute dangers to our liberties lie. First, the idea of having military commissions. They combine judge, jury, and prosecutor in a single branch for the trial of any kind of crime is preposterous. That's Alice in Wonderland. The reason why we have an independent judiciary is we know a prosecutor who is judge of his own case is likely to get all convictions. The idea that the president also could detain a U.S. citizen as a so-called enemy combatant on his say-so alone and dispatch him to Guantanamo Bay without a lawyer, our access to courts is also an exceptionally dangerous kind of power, reminiscent of King Louis XIV, who had his lettres de cachet, where he dispatched people to the Bastille to rot. The president has also claimed authority to violate any law that restricts his ability to gather foreign intelligence, including spying through electronic surveillance, breaking and entering homes, kidnapping, committing torture. This president has claimed the authority to sign bills and then disobey those parts of the bill that he dislikes on the ground that they're unconstitutional as he sees it, which is the equivalent of an absolute line item veto that the Supreme Court held unconstitutional 9 years ago. This president has threatened to use the Espionage Act to prosecute the New York Times and journalists who have exposed national security abuses, in my judgment, a flagrant violation of the First Amendment. This president has used secret evidence to label groups or organizations as terrorist organizations where there's no opportunity to confront the evidence against you. And you'll see why that there are many who are labeled as foreign terrorist organizations when they're actually charged criminally and have an opportunity to dispute the evidence. There are not a few cases that show acquittals. So that most recently was the Holy Land Foundation that was subject to an asset freeze on the ground that it was funding terrorist organizations, namely Hamas. When there was a criminal trial, the jury returned either hung verdicts or acquittals on all counts, and there were scores of counts. The president has also invoked executive privilege to keep his government secret from congressional oversight, even asserting a power to prevent his current or former aides from even appearing before Congress. You remember the infamous cases of Harriet Myers, Karl Rove, Joshua Bolten, who were summoned by the House and Senate Judiciary Committees to testify about the firings of U.S. attorneys, whether there was any political manipulation of personnel to pursue vote fraud cases against Democrats, legitimate inquiries for Congress to have, and the president said they aren't even going to show up because I have an absolute power to run my government in secret if I will. That kind of power, if asserted by Richard Nixon, would have prevented John Dean from revealing the Watergate cover-up to the Senate Watergate Committee. Shows you how far we've come that that when the president issued this order to his current and former aides to keep their mouth shut, there was hardly, you know, an outcry, and certainly in Congress or the public. At the time of Watergate, Saturday Night Massacre, there are 450,000 telegrams in at the White House within a week. So there is a public complacency with executive branch government that certainly is quite worrisome. And then the last I'll enumerate, because as a concession to the shortness of life, I can't identify every single executive group, executive abuse, but this is what I call the state secrets privilege. The government violates constitutional rights. The victim sues to recover damages. The president says, sorry, it's a state secret to reveal who brutalized you, who tortured you, and therefore your case has to be dismissed. So in all these areas, we think these are not just marginal, but core encroachments on our fundamental freedoms. And if not stopped, will soon lead to a government by the president himself, and that is simply a synonym for an elected despotism, which we deplore and the founding fathers would have been shocked about.
Well, thank you so much for enumerating those points, and I notice that they align very nicely with the bill itself, the American Freedom Agenda Act. And I note that this tendency towards justification of abuses of the Constitution of all manner on the basis of security, national security, safety, and fear of an enemy does go back quite some time. And certainly the whole ability for the president to unconstitutionally go to war without a declaration from Congress stems from similar justifications.
Well, let me interject a couple of observations, because first I have to confess that I drafted most of the American Freedom Agenda Act, so there's my handiwork there. Secondly, with regard to the idea that we're made safer by these abuses, I think that's counterfactual. For instance, because we have not given assurances to our allies abroad, like Italy, Germany, and Great Britain, that those who we detain or capture during covert operations or secret fighting Delta forces, they have stopped cooperating in many respects with our counterterrorism efforts. Parliament recently reported that there was a case in 2005 where MI6, that's the British counterpart to our CIA, refused to participate in the covert action because they couldn't receive assurances from the CIA that detainees would be tortured or dispatched to Guantanamo Bay to rot without any due process or trials. We have 26 CIA operatives who are currently under indictment in Italy for having kidnapped an Egyptian and dispatched them to Egyptian prisons for torture there. In Germany, there are 13 CIA operatives under arrest warrants for having kidnapped someone named Khalid al-Masri, who was then taken from Macedonia to a prison in Afghanistan, brutalized for 2 years, dumped out in Albania, never charged, never found to be complicit in any kind of terrorism. And so those kinds of cowboy-type exercises make us less safe because we're drawing up cooperation from the international community. And as regards to torture, the head of the CIA prison program in Eastern Europe, and Mr. Scheuer, has testified torture is useless in gathering intelligence because people will lie. They'll say anything if they're put under that excruciating pain. So really, to the extent torture is used, it's used just to show we're tough, to posture that you're tough on terrorism for political purposes. It really has no security purpose whatsoever, because no information gleaned from torture is viewed as reliable by the experts in the field.
Well, one might also observe that establishing torture as a normalized practice also has a chilling effect on dissent and on those who might oppose you, since fear of torture might certainly dissuade people from offering opposition. And we might also draw a parallel between the war in Iraq, for example, is not making us any safer, just as torture or all these other violations of the Constitution are not making us any safer. The war itself, which is the entire justification, is not making us any safer because, in fact, it's creating the terrorism which it's purported to stop and beat.
Yes, I think that's an excellent point. That is, what we're doing with our abuses is we're creating poster children as the recruitment tools for Al-Qaeda. And it's just natural for any people when they see their people abused to harden their resolve and to rally and come to fight. That's what we've experienced when there have been massacres or brutal attacks on civilians when Pearl Harbor began World War II for us. The fact that there are all these bombs on military and civilians died, you know, it was a so-called sneak attack, hardened our resolve to fight and defeat the Japanese. And to the extent that we commit abuses, it simply makes it easier for Al-Qaeda and Osama to say, this really is a war against Islam. It's not a war against terrorism, because otherwise why would they be abusing all government authority just against people whose names Americans can't pronounce? And that's the fact. When you look at the cases going to the Supreme Court and other courts, most Americans can't pronounce their names, and they say, oh, it couldn't be me because it's not Smith and Jones or otherwise. And that then feeds this claim that this is a war of civilizations and this is an attack on Islam and therefore jihad is justified, which makes everybody in all the world less safe, not more safe.
Oh, absolutely. I noticed that the central theme in the American Freedom Agenda Act is the theme of restoring checks and balances. And it's kind of interesting that we even have to have that kind of act, since if you ever took American Civics 101, that is pretty much the first thing they teach you, that the Constitution was established with three branches of government, each one to sort of counter the power of the other. And in a piece of video that I watched of you, I believe it was with Keith Olbermann, you were making the point that government is established to create freedom for people, not the other way around. It's not established for the government to, you know, reign freely over the people. It's established to secure freedom for the people.
Yes, I think that's an excellent point that's so frequently lost in understanding. The revolutionary idea of the Founding Fathers was that governments are instituted amongst men and women to secure the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are inalienable. They're not the sufferance of the president. That's the purpose of government. That's what self-government is about. The purpose of government is not to aggrandize authority or to build world empires. It's to make us free to pursue our individual faculties and endowments and our quest for happiness and fulfillment between ashes to ashes and dust to dust. And that being lost, the government and President Bush and Vice President Cheney think the purpose of government is to traipse around the Milky Way, and every time Bush thinks he sees an anti-democratic DNA, to launch a war. Well, that simply isn't the American Constitution. Maybe he should travel to another country and pursue a different kind of agenda. And that fundamental understanding that the purpose of government is to make us free and to secure our inalienable rights, not to make government strong, is one that has to be emphasized over and over again.
Two evenings ago, I had I attended a Republican meeting in Orange County and spoke to them, representing the Ron Paul point of view, as it were, and I had an interesting experience because I did not understand the extent to which people have been effectively propagandized with the fear of an amorphous unknown enemy, this Islamic Islamo-fascist terror that literally the words out of the mouths of the people were, if we do not fight them over there, we will have to fight them over here. They will not stop until we are utterly destroyed and wiped off the map. And they are quite apparently convinced of this and living in fear of it, and are therefore apparently willing to let these kinds of abuses prevail, simply based on that fear. It's a little bit disturbing. On the other hand, I think we can see that there's certainly not unanimity on that count. If that were the case, certainly the Ron Paul revolution wouldn't be in full swing as it is. Why don't you tell me your impression of the Ron Paul campaign and the movement that has sprung up around his candidacy, and what you think it means as a phenomenon politically in this country?
Yeah. Well, if I could, before I get to that very pointed and important question. Let me first discuss this idea about Islamist fascism and confronting, you know, an enemy that's the equivalent of Hitler, Stalin, Trotsky, Lenin, Mussolini, Hirohito combined. The fact is, we have enemies. They're out there. They want to kill us. There's no doubt about it. But they're hardly unique on that score. And if we're going to have a sensible, rational freedoms, we can't inflate every individual madman into the equivalent of the Soviet Union with 20,000 nuclear missiles and a 3-million-man Red Army and scientists who developed the most advanced kind of weapons of mass destruction. That kind of inflated danger is the death knell of our liberties. It'll put us in permanent war. And the fact is that Al-Qaeda doesn't have, you know, the Soviet nuclear weapons. It doesn't have a 3-million-man army. It doesn't have huge scientific. It doesn't have much of any scientific resources. And the danger of Al-Qaeda is not even close to what we customarily associate with war. And I think I can make my point by examining the statistics relating to murder. When you're killed by a murderer, you're as dead as killed by a terrorist. And we have annually approximately 17 to 20,000 murders. And that means since 9/11, we've chalked up, you know, 140, 150,000 people have been murdered in the United States. That doesn't mean that the laws against murder are no good and that we have to declare war against murder, suspend habeas corpus, and have martial law everywhere. That means that, sure, murder is bad. We capture. We try to deter people by capturing conspiracies to murder before anything happens. We punish, including the death penalty in various states. And we that we can't have a risk if it's going to everybody in prison. They can't do anything and lose the purpose of having the United States of America. So if we think of the danger of murder and see how much greater it is than the danger of international in regard to the amount of casualties that they're able to inflict, you see how overwrought the reaction is to international terrorism. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be alert, that we shouldn't have checks at airports, but it means we shouldn't suspend our liberty. Just like we don't, despite we have a murder that we'd all like to keep down. Now let's get to the Ron Paul campaign. I think Ron Paul campaign responds to a deep feeling amongst the American people for honesty and candor in political discourse. Not pomp, not inflated rhetoric, but getting back to fundamental values that we a small government that puts individual liberty and freedom, not reckless with safety, inclined to think that the military is the case, that we ought to be building an empire and $800 billion or something like that to keep expanding and projecting the presence of the United States into every nook and cranny of the galaxy. And I think he speaks with a candor and simplicity that's exceptionally attractive. Everyone knows when he speaks, he's not making it up. He's not maneuvering for a political advantage or for an edge in this particular special interest group or that one. He's speaking from the heart, and I think that's why he's commanded such enormous sympathy and support in the recent months.
And it would also seem that he is speaking specifically to a lot of this, the issues that we've already discussed here, and that people, whether they intellectually grasp the whole of it or not, on a some kind of a visceral understand we're not governed according to the principles that the Founding Fathers gave us, that we're not being governed constitutionally, essentially, and there's somewhat of an understanding, even if people aren't educated sufficiently yet to understand it on a detailed level, they kind of get it. And I think that that when people hear Ron Paul's message, it triggers that innate understanding that there's something essentially un-American about the way we're currently being governed.
Well, I think that's very insightful. You don't need to have a master's degree in the Federalist Papers or graduate as doctors of Harvard Law School in order to get the Constitution and what it means to be an American, which means we're not vassals, we're not serfs. We each have our own dignity. There's a pride in participating in self-government. Even if you make errors, listen, all of our wisdom is trial and error. And that is what we recognize as the earmark of the United States that's different from other countries. And I think Ron Paul is appealing to that instinct, which in some sense, is more important than the Constitution itself. Because if that instinct goes away and we have a sense of paternalism and dependency and anemia in the population, I don't care how many great words you can write in the Constitution, it's not going to be executed with a kind of strength and vigor that's going to keep us free. So in at the bottom of the equation here, it's the hearts and minds of American people that are going to count and be decisive. And as long as we never give up and insist that our officials follow the Constitution, that follow the ideas of the Founding Fathers, we've never lost our Constitution.
Absolutely. Well, very well said. And now, you were in the Reagan administration at the time when Dr. Paul was congressman on the Hill. And, of course, Dr. Paul was a supporter of Ronald Reagan, one of the few congressmen who actually endorsed him for the presidency. Did you happen to interact with Dr. Paul and establish a relationship with him back at the...
You're asking for memory now going back 20-some years, even more than 20 years, and I don't know whether I'm afflicted with Alzheimer's or whatever. I do have recollections of having occasions where I met and spoke with Ron and some of his there about his principles, which certainly were founded in deep commitment to liberty, and to that extent, he was certainly simpatico with the Reagan administration philosophy.
Yes, and I'm certainly, in terms of current political developments, certainly encouraged to see an organization like the American Freedom Agenda and people like Richard Viguerie joining it, and to see that there is at least the beginning of a grouping politically in Washington and elsewhere, which reflects the fundamental values that the Ron Paul campaign is promulgating and which is drawing people out politically through his campaign. And to me, that's an extremely encouraging development for the people who are taking action via the Ron Paul campaign right now, to know that there are people in Washington that will actually support us and stand up for the same thing that we're standing up for. It's entirely encouraging to all of us. I'm sure all of our listeners are pleased to hear that. And also interesting to note that there are organizations apparently on what we would normally attribute to as the left, people like Naomi Wolf and her organization, which was the American Freedom Campaign, I believe it's called, also coming out in support of the American Freedom Agenda Act.
Well, I don't think this is really a Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative split here. After all, the major impact of the American Freedom Agenda Act, if it was passed, is going to be on the next president of the United States. Bush has only months remaining. And that's going to apply to Hillary Clinton every bit as much as to Rudy Giuliani. And that's what the American people need to think about in examining checks and balances. It's not for Democrats or Republicans. It's not like a restricted railroad ticket, good for this day and train only. It's not, liberal, conservative, or otherwise. It's for the American people. It doesn't matter who occupies office. We can't trust anybody to act without any kind of oversight and vetting and scrutiny. We are not angels, and power has a tendency to corrupt, as Lord Acton said. Heck, just think of George Bush himself. Texas, he was said as governor, he was very compromising with the legislature. He was affable. He wasn't grasping for power. The governor of Texas is notorious for being relatively weak. Then you take him, stick him in to be president of the United States, and my gosh, this fellow has turned from being very restrained and saying the United States should not be into nation building in his campaign. Then once he's in the White House, he wants to build nations everywhere today in the Milky Way.
Well,
and he said, if there's any place in the globe that's not democratic, we have to attack. That's what is, what, upon what meat does this our president feed? He's grown so great, as Julius Caesar would have said. And this is something that we find repeatedly, where politicians, once given unchecked power, naturally tend to abuse them. They think they're infallible, and they become sneering and arrogant, and it crushes them personally. And that's why we can't think of checks and balances as conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat, libertarian, or otherwise. It's one thing.
Well,
it's
certainly
the Constitution. It's all of us. We all believe in it, no matter who is in the power.
I certainly had occasion to raise that point with that group of Republicans that I spoke to a few days ago. In discussing the Freedom Agenda Act pointed out that although you might feel at this present moment comfortable with the existing administration having all of these powers, will you feel, guess who's going to inherit them should the Republicans lose this next election? It'll probably be Hillary Clinton. Are you comfortable with her having all of those powers? So,
and I also said when they were so complacent with Alberto Gonzalez and the Attorney General said, wait till Hillary Clinton appoints Webb Hubble. Then you can't complain.
Well, yes, absolutely. Let's see, another area that I know that you have been active in from observing some pieces that I, a video that I found online, appearances on various news shows, is the issue of impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. And well, I'd like to ask about the political traction, the political environment, the political atmosphere in Washington with regard to the American Freedom Agenda Act and everything that it addresses, and also the issue of impeachment, and where that's sort of at right now. Is the entire Congress completely asleep, and or are there stirrings, are there rumblings that we can look for this bill to get some traction and perhaps move towards impeachment, get some traction?
The most apposite adjective of Congress is effete when it comes to this issue. There'd be some. John Conyers of the House Judiciary Committee would probably hold an impeachment inquiry, except Nancy Pelosi has said impeachment is off the table, not because it's not warranted by the facts, not because the Constitution doesn't encourage impeachment to restrain unchecked power in the White House. It's because she thinks it would not be good for the Democratic Party in her future as Speaker of the House. So when you take impeachment off the table and tell Bush and Cheney, no matter what you do, you will stay in office, you naturally embolden them to be even more arrogant and sneering at congressional oversight, which is what has happened. There's no way that this administration will give over any scrap of paper relating to electronic surveillance, torture, inhumane, cruel, or other kinds of interrogation practices of the CIA, because this Congress, even though it's controlled by Democrats, even though George W. Bush is the low water mark of presidential popularity since Nixon, even though the Democrats received a vote of approval last November, they are too weak and effete to do anything. And that's why impeachment, even though polling shows it's risen past the 50% mark for at least beginning an inquiry, is going no place in Congress, because these members there don't understand the Constitution. They're really quite petty in their thinking, and unless they get hundreds of thousands of emails, they simply won't do anything. And I think perhaps the greatest recent disappointment is the confirmation hearings of Michael Mukasey for being Attorney General. It was clear that he will be confirmed overwhelmingly, and yet he was endorsing virtually every single abuse of this administration, including its refusal to permit Congress to oversee any executive branch function of any importance. And yet, they're ready to confirm him, probably close by unanimous vote. And if you get a Senate that does that, how can you impeach a president when Congress itself has endorsed an attorney general who approves everything the president is doing?
So how did we get to this point where there is virtually, one man in all of Washington, Congressman Ron Paul, who's willing to stand up for the rule of law, for the Constitution, for the American people, for freedom, for the principles upon which this country was founded? There are certainly people that feel that what can be amorphously referred to as the elite have somehow managed to place their people throughout Washington, and that if you get into Washington at this point, there's a pretty almost certainty that you are basically bought and paid for and possessed and owned by this so-called elite, and that the program right now is in fact another good topic to eventually dissolve the United States into the North American Union and sacrifice our sovereignty to this kind of international financial elite, and that's the direction that we're actually going towards, and that in one way, shape, or form, those in government today are complicit with this and will do nothing whatsoever to stand in its way.
Well, I don't attribute the greatest danger to international finance and whatever buccaneering attitude prevails there. It's obnoxious, but the greatest danger is internal rot. It's internal indifference if not standing up as Americans should in rebuking the government for abusing its powers and insisting that a staple of every debate in a campaign for Congress or the president is, are you going to assert checks and balances? Are you going to make sure there's not unlimited power? Are you going to make it insistent that no one's going to be imprisoned based upon the president's say-so alone? And those things collapse, and there's this acquiescence in presidential supremacy. That's going to be the downfall of the United States, because when you have only one branch of government, it inevitably leads to arrogance, adventurism abroad. That's what happened in the Roman Empire, and we will be fighting wars, because wars make presidents stronger and make Congress weaker, and that will bring our downfall. We'll be much too overextended, and we will lose our liberties on a cross of empire building.
Well, Congressman Paul is frequently pointing out these days that those who are currently ruling the nation may want to maintain this empire and extend it, but that we are approaching a point financially where the current regime, in terms of the way things are done and approached, is possibly not sustainable from a simple financial and economic point of view.
It's staggering. $800 billion spent so far in Afghanistan and Iraq. $800 billion? I mean, and with what result? You know, and this isn't even close to the size of World War II. $800 billion, and it boggles the imagination. And, of course, the way in which this is accomplished is by pushing the burden of the debt on posterity, on our children, our children's children, by raising the funding through debt instruments. Another way in which the administration tries to shield the cost and the consequences of the war from the American people by trying to minimize its impact, not only in this way of putting the burden of the financial support on future generations, but doing things like preventing photography of coffins draped in the American flag returning up in Delaware so Americans won't think that people actually die in war.
Yes, absolutely. What is the next step now with the American Freedom Agenda Act now that it's been introduced?
Well, what we hope to do is line up several co-sponsors, and once we've got about 20 or 25, then we're going to be approaching the chairman of the House and Senate Judiciary Committees to hold hearings on the bill. That would be John Conyers and Pat Leahy. And we may run a few press conferences, have some debates sponsored in colleges and universities. What we'd also like to do, if we can raise sufficient funds, is to have me really do, during some of the presidential debates, on these go from city to city, and during the day of the debate, inject the American Freedom Campaign issues into the discussion by briefing the news reporters on what they need to be thinking about and considering whether any of these candidates could be entrusted with the reins of power if they're not going to renounce signing statements and military commissions and enemy combatants and all of the evils that I've recited that have been commonplace under Bush and Cheney.
So if a concerted phone calling and emailing and mailing campaign to congressional representatives and senators at this time, that would be well timed.
Of course, any kind of support like that with, you know, the American Freedom Agenda strongly encourages. And you can visit our website www.americanfreedomagenda.org, and you can see our campaign planks, our presidential American Freedom Pledge, and the Citizen Pledge we're asking people to sign, to show that they, as citizens, want to ensure the Constitution remains vibrant and robust, not atrophied, say, at the altar of war and presidential edict.
Well, I want to really thank you for your history of standing up for the Constitution and for freedom in this country, and for standing on principle the way Ron Paul has over the years. And you know, I wish that we had more men like you in Washington and on the inside of things to keep this going. But I'm willing to suspect that when the power of the Ron Paul Revolution of the Citizens Movement that has sprung up around Ron Paul's candidacy becomes more and more apparent, I think that there will be many more people will be coming to your organization and seeking you out to join with what you're doing, because when an atmosphere of fear and intimidation prevails, many people may keep their opinions, their true opinions, their true feelings, their true ideals to themselves, and sort of go, you know, with the flow, and you know, not want to be a squeaky wheel. But when the American people stand up, as they are standing up now, and as I believe they will continue to stand up in even increasing numbers, I think that many people who might want to be supporting what you're working towards will step forward and join us and become more public in supporting this type of thing.
Well, what I can would like to say to your audience out there, if there is any group that would large numbers that would like me to come out and speak about the importance of this issue, you know, they can email me at the American Freedom Agenda, and perhaps we can arrange a way to do that, because ultimately that's the only way we'll succeed in saving the country. The ordinary citizen has to understand instinctively when the Constitution is transgressed, and to have the courage and strength to rebuke those public officials who are disobeying their oath, and to be vigilant over government, because that's the ultimate protection of our liberties. It's citizen vigilance. It's not corrupted by money or ulterior motives, just a love of country. And that's what we're striving for here in the American Freedom Agenda.
Well, it is happening, and I'm certainly very encouraged. I think I would certainly have been a person previously to the Ron Paul revolution taking hold, would have said that the American people have been completely brainwashed and bred into complacency and are pretty much a lost cause. As long as they've got their comforts, they're not going to stand up or say anything about these abuses. But I think that that attitude is being proven wrong. I'm glad to say that I was wrong, because I see it every time I go out with Ron Paul literature on the street, with a group of people to raise awareness about the campaign. We encounter people, and large numbers of people, that really salute us for what we're doing, you know. And so there's definitely changes happening. A change is afoot in the body politic of America. There is yet hope for the Republic. And again, I want to thank you for everything that you're doing. And certainly I will keep that offer of speaking to groups of Ron Paul supporters in mind, because, you know, of course, we're always planning events of different kinds. And I will definitely let people know that possibility exists.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's been a delight.
I appreciate that so much, Mr. Fine. You have a great day.
Okay.
All right. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. So there was Mr. Bruce Fine. He is, again, the person who is primarily responsible for drafting the American Freedom Agenda Act, introduced into Congress by Congressman Ron Paul recently. A very important piece of legislation. I think it's a rally point around which we can gather to continue the fight for the restoration of the Constitution. I'm going to go ahead and play for you the audio of the video that when they established the American Freedom Agenda, and there was a press conference, and it was broadcast on C-SPAN, and Ron Paul was there. So we're going to go ahead and play that for you right now.
And I'm very pleased to announce that we have here in the audience one candidate, Ron Paul from Texas, who has agreed to sign the American Freedom Agenda and support all of these principles as he campaigns and, if elected to office, as he serves. And Congressman Paul, could you step up? And we'd like to see you sign, hold it up for everyone to see, and elaborate on your willingness.
Okay. That's, of course, Bruce Fine introducing Congressman Paul.
You don't have a gun at my back here.
Uncovered, yeah, this is right.
Okay, what's our date today?
March 20th.
20.
It's not the Ides of March.
Very good. Glad to do it. It's a real pleasure to be here today.
among these very important conservative leaders. To me, it's unique and important. I'm excited about what you're doing, because sometimes there's careless thought about civil liberties, and all of a sudden Republicans and conservatives don't care, and that is in the realm of liberals. And I think this is a testimony to the fact that there are a lot of conservatives that do care. And I think that's very important. You know, there's a lot of talk when we get ready to appoint a Supreme Court justice or any justice about whether or not they're a strict constitutionalist. And we're always looking for them. But sometimes I think that debate is very, very careless, because sometimes from the conservative viewpoint, strict constitutionalists are concerned about Roe versus Wade and guns and maybe some economic issue. But when it comes to this, they don't consider this being a strict constitutionalist. These gentlemen here, leaders in the conservative movement, know the difference, and being a strict constitutionalist doesn't mean just when you're pleased to do it. And that's why I think this is so important, what you're doing, because this makes a very, very powerful point. I think if you're a strict constitutionalist, we should follow Article 1, Section 8, and deal with war under those conditions. You know, think about how many problems we might be able to avoid if we don't go to war without a declaration of war. And look at the mess that we have now. And it's under the conditions of war, and it was mentioned, I think, by Richard, that under these conditions, this is when our liberties are challenged. And so it is trying to avoid those conditions when the American people become frightened. So there is a saying that goes that sometimes we ought to be more worried about what's happening here than what's happening overseas. And since I think our foreign policy has an effect on the threat of terrorism, and then you add on to it the threat from our own government. And I don't, as bad as this is, I don't put all the blame on the president, because I think Congress has tremendous responsibility, even on the war issue. We just renege our responsibility and turn it over to the executive branch, and we do not protect the prerogatives of the Congress. And that is my message constantly. Besides, I've been a member of Congress, and I think I can better be critical of the Congress, but they give up too easily, and the temptation for the executive branch over the many, many years, or probably throughout all of history, they say the executive branch is always hungry for power. So it's up to the people, and it's up to the Congress to rein in the power of the executive branch. So I'm delighted to join you. I'm delighted to sign this, and I wish you well, and I hope I can help you in this project.
Good. So there we have Congressman Ron Paul. Back in March of this year, at the establishment of the American Freedom Agenda, and it's encouraging to me to see that there is a formation of constitutionally minded individuals in and around the establishment that. Are supporting the same principles that Dr. Paul supports. So very encouraging. I am going to continue to bring you more of this kind of information. We're working right now on getting Naomi Wolf on as a guest. Now, she'll be coming more from the so-called left point of view, but I'm very encouraged by the fact that as left-wing, quote-unquote, and putting that in quotation marks, as she has been, her recent talks and her recent statements have been much more centrist and much more, I think, showing a budding consciousness about the importance of the Constitution. And I think that that shows the power of what Dr. Paul is doing, about his message, and about the work that we are doing, that the supporters of Dr. Paul and his freedom message are doing. If we keep it up, we're going to shift the balance of power in this country. It's already happening. We're seeing the very beginnings of it. You know why? You know why we're going to win that? Because people want to be free. It's pretty much that simple. They don't want to be slaves, and they don't want to live in fear. They don't want to live in a state of constant fear and war. It's just not a desirable way to live. And when they are offered an alternative way to see the they will gravitate towards it. They will gravitate towards it, and they are. Aren't you? You're listening right now. Chances are pretty good because you, the freedom message appeals to you. You don't want to be in fear. You don't want to live in a state of constant war. You want to be free. And you believe in the wisdom of freedom. You believe in the intelligence of freedom as a way of life and as a system of government. So I'm going to go ahead and leave you with that for today. And also tell you that tomorrow, I'm going to invite you to be part of a special experiment. There is a new program that I am part of, this beta. And I am going to be broadcasting tomorrow the show as a radio show and simultaneously as an internet television show. You'll be able to see me and you'll be able to see the clips that I'm playing, assuming that they have video. And you will also be able to see guests that I have on the show. There will be no guest tomorrow. I don't think there will be a guest tomorrow. And it's going to be quite an interesting development. It will be a television news broadcast on your computer, hosted by Stephen Vincent. The Freedom Message, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. And we're going to see how it goes. Now, you know, when things are in beta, there can be problems. I'm not guaranteeing that this is going to work. But from everything that I've checked out so far, it looks like it ought to. Will there be problems? Who knows? We're going to give it a try. So the only thing you really need to do to watch the show tomorrow is go to my homepage, www.ronpaulfreedommessage.com, and right there on the homepage, you'll see the player, and you just click on it, and it will tune in to my broadcast. You can also listen to the radio program as well. Either way is fine. But listen or watch tomorrow. And if you're having trouble watching for some reason, then just listen to the show. But give it a shot. Try to watch. And I'd also wouldn't mind getting a feedback on that. If you have difficulty or if it goes well, you can email me at freedommessage@sbcglobal.net. But again, go to my website, www.ronpaulfreedommessage.com. Now, if you have a problem, actually go ahead and test it right now. Go to my website and test it out right now, because you can watch some videos of Bruce Fine on the page right now. If you have a problem with it, what you may need to do is reinstall or upgrade your Flash player. I believe all you need to do is go flash.com, download the latest software, and that ought to take care of any problems that you have. So thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Bruce Fine. We're going to be bringing you more such interviews with key individuals in the political scene and in the Ron Paul movement to restore constitutional government to our land. And got a whole bunch of new guests that I'm in the process of working on getting on for you. So tune in tomorrow for that special test broadcast of the Freedom Message television show. And I'm going to leave you with some music, as I always like to do. Let's go ahead and play a Steve Dorr tune for you, Choose Liberty.
There's real excitement in the air, people talk everywhere about the good news spreading all around. Young and old, hand in hand, for truth and freedom across this land together. We stand on common ground. The Constitution as our guide.